Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, so for a lot of parents out there, getting into special education, it can feel like you're trying to learn a whole new language, right? Especially something like an individualized education plan, an IEP. It really does feel like a maze sometimes. All the forms, the meetings, and, just figuring out how to advocate best for your child. So today we're going to unpack three really common mistakes parents make with IEPs and, more importantly, how you can avoid them. This isn't just like textbook stuff. We've pulled this from tons of conversations with families, with educators, with experts. So think of this as maybe a shortcut to getting really well informed.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And knowing these pitfalls, it's just so vital. And something that's coming up more and more is assistive technology. It's often overlooked, but it can be incredibly powerful for helping students meet those IEP goals. Things like safety, independence, communication, even inclusion. So this deep dive, we really want to give you the tools and honestly, the confidence to be your child's absolute strongest advocate.
Right. Our mission today is basically to equip you, give you the knowledge to handle the IEP process better, dodge those common roadblocks, and really feel empowered advocating for your child. Okay, let's unpack this. So where do parents trip up first? It's actually right at the starting line, which is kind of surprising. Mistake number one, waiting. Waiting for someone else to tell you, hey, maybe you should start the IEP process.
Something that really jumped out at me when we were looking into this, over half of parents we heard from, they found out about IDP eligibility from the school, or maybe an outside evaluator, not because they asked first. I mean, imagine waiting for news that important.
It's fascinating, and it matters so much because waiting, well, it can seriously delay getting essential services, really essential supports. We've heard stories, families starting the evil just days before school starts, or maybe after their child aged out of early intervention. That's valuable time lost.
Right. A delay like that can really put a child behind. And here's something interesting for you to think about. Often, parents wait for like really obvious academic problems. But our research suggests those subtle changes, social emotional stuff, sensory things, those are often the first signs, the critical indicators to start talking. That's really your cue.
Okay, so that's the mistake. How do you avoid it then? Be proactive, obviously, but strategically, right? First step, start those conversations early. If you even just suspect a need, talk to your pediatrician, talk to therapists, school staff. Don't wait.
Exactly.
And it's also really key to get the difference between an IEP and a 504 plan. They're not the same. An IEP, that's comprehensive, specialized instruction, measurable goals, the whole package. A 504 is more about accommodations, leveling the playing field without changing the curriculum itself.
Important distinction.
But you also really need to learn your state's specific rules. The IEP timeline, who qualifies, it
It
varies.
does.
And maybe the biggest thing, know your rights. You as a parent can request an evaluation anytime, even if the school hasn't said a word about it. You can initiate.
Yes, and that brings up a really key question, doesn't it? Why wait for something to become a big problem when you can get ahead of it? Knowing your rights isn't just, oh, I can ask. It's knowing that putting that request in writing often kicks off legal timelines for the school. That's real leverage for you.
Okay. The written request.
Exactly. And here's an expert tip for you. Those early elementary years, that's often when schools are actually the most responsive to IEP requests. So getting in early, it can make a massive difference down the road for your child.
That's really powerful. Good advice. Okay, let's shift to the second mistake. This one's about what goes into the IEP. Mistake number two, not insisting strongly enough on assistive technology and safety supports being included. We hear this a lot. Parents face a real uphill battle sometimes trying to get these supports written in. And we're talking about more than just, say, a GPS tracker, although that can be part of it. It's a whole range of tools, right? Things that help with independence or smooth out transitions between classes, tools that might help reduce the need for a constant one-on-one aid, or even just make communication better, between the school staff and caregivers.
Yeah, and there are definitely common hurdles here. Sometimes schools push back a bit on certain technologies, maybe just privacy concerns they cite, or sometimes it's just a misunderstanding of their own district's policies, frankly, especially around things like GPS or maybe voice features.
Right.
School staff might not even realize that a lot of these tools have features you can customize
Yeah.
or even disable during school hours to meet whatever guidelines they have. And, often parents just aren't sure how to push for it effectively. How do you frame that request? What kind of paperwork actually helps?
So they feel a bit lost on how to argue for it.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is schools might bring up privacy or training costs as reasons to resist AT. But the real insight for you as a parent is to frame this technology not as some extra hassle, but as a solution, something that actually promotes independence. And hey, maybe it even reduces the need for really costly one-on-one staffing in the long run. See? Solution-focused.
Solution-focused. I like that. Okay, so how do you avoid this mistake? How do you advocate effectively for these tools? First, again, know your rights. Federal law, specifically IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, it requires the school team to consider assistive technology.
Yes, it does.
If that technology helps your child meet their IEP goals and get what's called FAPE, a free appropriate public education, they have to consider it.
It's part of FAPE.
So if your child's goals are about, say, independence or transitioning safely between classes or communication, well, then a tool designed for that could be exactly what's needed. It fits.
Mm-hmm.
And documentation is huge here, right? Supporting letters from doctors, therapists, detailing those specific needs. That carries a lot of weight in those meetings.
Absolutely critical.
And crucially, it's how you frame the request. You have to connect the technology directly to achieving those IEP goals. Explain how it helps, how it might reduce reliance on an aide or improve communication, or make sure your child can participate safely in everything. Link it back.
Linking it back is key. And if we think about the bigger picture here, using specific language really makes a difference. When you're advocating, think broadly about what assistive technology means. It could be an app for communication, a tool for sensory regulation, something for executive function, or, yeah, a safety device like a location monitor.
Right. It's a wide category.
It is.
Yeah.
So, for example, for a general safety request, maybe for a child with a history of elopement that's, you know, leaving a safe area without permission.
Okay.
You might say something like, due to child's name's history of elopement and safety concerns, we're requesting that a real-time location monitoring device, like AngelSense, be included in the IEP as an assistive technology and safety accommodation.
Mm.
It would be worn during school hours to monitor location and help staff respond quickly if needed. See how specific that is.
Yeah, very clear. What about for transitions? Those can be tough.
Right. So you could say, because child's name struggles with transitions and needs extra supervision, a device with real-time monitoring and alerts would support safer movement, you know, between classes, during recess, hallway transitions, those less structured times.
Okay. And what if the goal is reducing dependence on a one-on-one aide?
Good one. You could frame it like, as child's name works towards being more independent from one-on-one staffing, we request using a monitored safety device. This helps maintain safety while they build autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually supports both the student's growth and the school's staffing flexibility. See, you're highlighting a benefit for them, too.
Smart. And then you need to talk about how it's actually used, right? Implementation.
Exactly. You'd add something like, we ask that the relevant school staff be trained on how to use this assistive technology.
Mm.
That includes responding to alerts and using it securely. Clear guidelines should be written right into the IEP.
Okay, that makes it really concrete. So pulling it all together,
yeah,
it really sounds like assistive technology, it's not some optional extra or luxury.
Not at all.
It's often really essential for protecting kids, supporting their safety, actually empowering the staff too, and helping schools meet their legal obligations under IDEA for FAPE.
Precisely.
All right, so that brings us to the third common mistake. Mistake number three. Underestimating how important follow-up is and ongoing team collaboration. It's so easy to kind of breathe a sigh of relief once that IEP document is signed, right? Like, okay, right. Done.
Big sigh of relief.
But it's not done. It's really an ongoing process because your child's needs, they change, they evolve, and the plan needs to evolve with them. But that consistent follow-up, that communication, it often gets overlooked.
It really does. So to avoid this, you have to think partnership. True partnership. First, really work on building a collaborative relationship with the IEP team. That means being open, being respectful, but also being firm when you need to advocate for what your child needs. It's a balance.
Okay. Respectful but firm.
Exactly. Yeah. And regular follow-ups are just crucial. Don't just assume everything in the plan is actually happening smoothly. Ask for updates. Check in. And if you have concerns, document them. Keep a record.
Good advice.
And remember, you don't have to wait for the annual review. If your child's needs change significantly, or if you feel the plan just isn't working, you can request a new IEP meeting anytime. That's your right.
Okay, you can call a meeting too.
You absolutely can. And don't be afraid to bring in backup, outside support. Maybe it's a professional advocate, maybe it's therapists who work with your child, or specialists. they can offer professional input and really strengthen your position.
Right. Bring in your own experts.
Exactly. And here's another expert tip for you on this point. Use data. Data can be incredibly powerful. If you're using assistive technology, for instance, many tools can provide concrete data. Maybe it's about location patterns, safety alerts, activity levels, things like that.
Ah, okay. Real-world data.
Real-world data. You can bring that data to the team to support requests for adjustments, to reinforce your concerns. It helps everyone make more informed decisions based on facts, not just assumptions. Think of it like bringing evidence to the table, hard evidence about your child's day-to-day reality and needs.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Using tech not just for support, but for information too. So let's try to bring this all together then. Getting the right IEP for your child. Sounds like it really boils down to persistence, definitely preparation, partnership with the team, and having the right tools.
That sums it up well.
It means starting early, like we said, really getting your head around your rights, advocating strongly for what your child needs, including those essential supports like assistive technology, and just keeping those lines of communication open, maintaining strong, collaborative relationships with the school team.
Absolutely. And we really want to drive home that core message about assistive technology. It's not just about, safety in a narrow sense or tracking. It directly supports those critical IUT goals. Things like fostering independence, making transitions smoother, improving communication, maybe even reducing that need for constant one-on-one support. It really acts like a bridge, connecting your child's unique needs with the IEP team's ability to meet them safely, effectively, and consistently.
That's a great way to think about it, a bridge. So remember, everyone listening, you really are your child's most important advocate. Trust your gut instincts, understand your rights, use the tools that are available to you, and work with that IEP team. Collaborate.
And maybe here's a final thought for you to mull over, something to take away from today. Considering everything we've discussed, what's one specific goal you could identify for your child right now? Maybe related to their independence or their safety or communication. And then how might you start framing that conversation with your IEP team? How could you begin exploring together how assistive technology might actually support that vision you have for your child?